Okay, this is Brad Schimmel calling the meeting to order at 2:01 p.m., and we have still all three commissioners, the executive secretary, anyone else from the BCPL that's joined us on the line?
Yeah, I don't think on the phone, but BCPL staff is here, and J.R. Ross from Wiz Politics is here.
Okay, thank you. So our first order of business is we have meetings from two meetings to approve. We have first the March 17th regular meeting of the BCPL. Has everyone received those?
Yes, I received them, looked them over, and I'd be glad to move it.
Okay. Do we have a second on the meeting, on the minutes?
I can second that.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor of approving the minutes from March 17, say aye. I'll say aye.
Aye.
I guess I'll say aye. I didn't read every word of it, but we're getting a lot of beeping. I don't know if that's on everybody's iron or just mine.
Yeah, we must have folks joining us.
Yeah, I got a lot of requests for a call-in information today.
Okay.
Who's on the line?
So all three commissioners have said aye to approving the March 17 meeting minutes, so those are approved. Then on to the March 27th special meeting we had.
That was a very short little meeting, and I remember it, and I will move the adoption of those minutes.
I'll second that. This is Brad. Any discussion regarding those minutes? Approving the minutes from the March 27 meeting, say aye.
Aye.
This is Brad. I'll say aye.
I guess it's Matt. I'll say aye.
Okay. Then we have all three commissioners have approved the minutes. Moving on then to the loan approvals for this meeting, a list was distributed. It appears to me to contain loans that are all for proper purpose. Executive Secretary, have they been examined for such purpose?
They have.
Good. I will move the approval of those loans.
I'll second that.
This is Matt. I just have one quick question. Two of the loans, numbers 11 and 12, are larger sums. It looks like we're refinancing some current BCPL loans. I don't know if we've done any since I've been a commissioner. I've seen these in the past, though. Does that just mean that exact amount is owed to us and we're just restructuring at a lower rate, I'm assuming, for the municipality?
That's correct, Matt. This is Rich.
So we're not necessarily giving that money out. It's basically just changing, you know, the terms of it.
Correct. We are offered... We have a hurdle that borrowers need to qualify for in order for them to refinance existing BCPL debt. They need to borrow additional funds for us in order to maintain our income stream to the beneficiaries. And Two Rivers did meet that hurdle, so they are able to refinance their existing debt with us.
What are the rates right now?
I would have to go check. I would expect them to be... I think these are loans that we just made last year. And so they're going to be 25 or, you know, a quarter of a percent to 50, you know, to a half a percent higher than that.
Okay.
Okay. Any other discussion regarding the loans for this meeting? All in favor of approving these loans? Say aye.
Matt, I'll say aye.
And this is Brad, aye. So we have all three commissioners in favor, and those loans are then approved. We've got number four on the most recent agenda then is a discussion of the governor's request for the BCPL's budget and Joint Finance Committee action. I think we addressed this at the March 17 meeting to some extent, but what caused this to be on the budget this month?
Hi, this is Matt. A couple things. Is somebody on vacation right now? I mean, there's a lot of things on here. I mean, I'll briefly talk about this, but there's some of the things on this agenda. I don't know if for the Attorney General, if we, because obviously we want to talk about the Bucks today. I mean, I'm open to moving some of these other items to another meeting if that's workable, but like item 5
that.
And 6, for example. But I'll briefly talk on item number 4.
Okay.
When we talked about it, our last, that was called on like a Friday. It was a random meeting. My understanding from what the motion was by the Attorney General was just to allow Tia Nelson as the Executive Secretary to more or less present the governor's budget. And there's portions of his budget, like the shared services pilot program, that I like. But as I had said in that meeting, I don't support costs to continue. I have some concerns with a few staff positions I pointed out last time. The land archivist, which I think we need to invest some time into one, knowing whether or not trust funds can be used to pay for something that really does not benefit our trust beneficiaries. And then I also question an IT person for a 6-person office. When I first came to the board after, I think it was in November, and I don't think the position was filled to mid-January, so I think it was about 3 months or so, there wasn't even a person in that position. And I guess my question would be, if we can go 3 months without a person in a position, do we really need that person there? So, and I'd also like to see some discretionary cuts. My whole point with the last meeting on that Friday was obviously everybody, I know the Attorney General needed to leave the meeting. It just seemed like the thing to do, just move ahead. I don't support parts of the budget, and I'm free to continue not supporting those.
Okay.
This is Doug. As I remember that meeting, we did allow her to present the governor's budget and to support the governor's budget. That's what the actual minute said. And I understand some of the concerns that you raised at that meeting. I was funded at that time, and I won't spend a lot of time now. The archivist is something we can look into. We shouldn't make short-term decisions. The IT issue is one that the governor or DOA has decided to put on hold, and we'll follow that and see what happens. Again, those are both items that we don't need to be in a hurry about. So based on that, if it's necessary, I would make a motion that this board support the budget as presented by the governor.
I mean, I think the motion, if you want to talk about the motion, I don't support
well,
it.
I just made a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion, Ms. Brad.
Okay,
so we can have the discussion. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, for discussion, I mean, it doesn't really matter. I mean, finance is going to meet at some point. And Tia wanted to brief the members of the finance committee, the 16 members, and she said she had to do it in a certain time frame. I think it made you guys, the other two commissioners seemingly wanted to at least let her go and discuss what the budget was, you know, how it was offered. There are some things I'd like to see changed. I think we need to look into that land archivist position, the IT position, and possibly other spots. But we don't have to make a motion. I mean, we're not finance. We're not approving it today. And I think the Attorney General in our last meeting made a good comment that down the road, we as commissioners, even if it's approved by finance, we can make changes as commissioners.
Yeah, we can always reduce our own expenditures. So I think that just given the time crunch we're under with the budget process moving forward, we just don't have time to make any of those changes now.
I agree we as people don't. Let's just let finance deal with it.
Yeah. Okay. So for now I think the motion today wasn't necessary because I think we did cover this at the March 27th meeting.
Well, this is Doug. If the chair pleases, I'm willing to withdraw that motion, but I'd make a comment. It's been said that the treasurer plans to go to joint finance and try to convince them to make changes in the budget as we put it together and as I would like to approve it and as the governor approved it. And I'm very concerned about that. I think it's out of place and very problematic that one commissioner decides to start trying to change the budget of this board. And that's why I made a motion that the board supports the budget, because I think there are three of us, and if a majority support it, then I think that should be how it is.
Okay. I, am I, am I correct? We did do this at the last meeting, I think.
That is correct. There was a unanimous vote to approve the governor's errata budget request.
Okay.
I believe it was more or less to allow TIA to go to the finance members and present it and say that, you know, the board. I don't think any of this matters. I mean, I think, you know, Secretary La Follette has said that he supports it. You know, he's you know, his point is, you know, that we shouldn't have a commissioner, in this case being myself. Well, I'm going to talk to any member of finance I want to. And even if the board, you know, voted 2-1 and I was in the minority, I'm still a free person here. And if I want to talk to members of finance, I'm going to do that.
Fair enough. Okay. I
say we move on.
Yeah, I agree. So then,
I want to make the point that if we reach that point where the board has supported the budget and one commissioner decides to go outside that position, then I think it should be clear that TIA or the other commissioners should at that point be able to remind the Joint Finance that the board majority supports the budget.
Okay. Well, the situation is that if the board decided to go a particular direction, and if it were the executive secretary undermining that decision, we could take action. But as each of us as members of the board, we can do what we want as the treasurer notes. So I don't think there's anything the others of us can do about it. So it is what it is. So on to item number 4. This dealt with the executive secretary's responses to allegations relating to her activities on the Global Warming Task Force. And just for historical perspective, I want to make sure I have a clear understanding of what occurred. The then governor of the state, Jim Doyle, had requested that the executive secretary, or nominated the executive secretary from the BCPL to serve on a state task force to examine global warming issues. Is that accurate?
That is correct.
So when that occurred, Ms. Nelson, when that occurred, were any of the board commissioners aware that that request had been made?
Yes, all board members were aware.
And this is Doug, and as a board member at that time, I agree that we were aware of it, and we didn't get regular reports, but there were regular reports in the news media, and TIA called them to our attention occasionally.
Did any board member express concern or objection about the participation in that task force's work?
No.
And again, that's true. There was never any question by any of the board members.
Now, you know, there's been some discussion. It's an item coming up later on in this agenda, and that is relating to the executive secretary's work hours. Ms. Nelson, do you typically work a 40-hour week, or is there some more or less to that, or how does your work week function?
Yeah, I work as long as is necessary to get the job done. These days, I'm averaging a 55-hour work week. I do what's necessary to get the job done. Sometimes that means working evenings. Sometimes that means working weekends. Sometimes it's a bit more regular hours. But I'm certainly putting in a lot of extra hours these days.
You had sent out an email recently talking about you and some members of your staff having completed meetings with a number of municipalities. Do a lot of those meetings involve evening and weekend work?
Yeah, all the county, we've done 20 county unit meetings, more than that, I think. I didn't tally them up. All of those are evening meetings, and they are outstate, so they require substantial travel. We've done 25 town district meetings. I have to give the credit to Rich and Tom because of my preoccupations back here in Madison. They've done way more of them than I have. But those meetings required overnight travel and required working on Saturdays. So we've done it in within the last 6 months. We've attended over 35 meetings with trust fund loan program borrowers, the towns, counties, and others, all of which required weekends or evenings.
Okay. Does anyone else have any other questions, or Ms. Nelson, do you have any?
Well, this is Doug. I don't have a question, but just as I think I stated at a previous meeting, Tia serves in an executive position, and Tia doesn't punch a time clock. We've never expected her to. And over the many years that I've been on the board, when she's been secretary, she's worked what it took to get the job done, and that in many cases was more than 40 hours on many occasions.
Well, this is Matt. I have a bunch to say on it today. I mean, I don't know if we really want to spend the time on it today. I don't know where the other commissioners are at, but, you know, with the comment that was just made, I mean, it is a position that does require 40 hours of work, okay? It's not a position like the three of us as elected. We don't have time clocks, and I understand they don't specifically clock in and clock out to the minute, but you are expected as an employee, in the case of the executive secretary, to work a 40-hour work week. And my question in regard to this was, supposedly it was, you know, the way the first Commissioner Schimmel asked the question, you know, whether or not the other commissioners knew about it. Well, if they didn't publicly vote on it, you can't poll the members of the board privately. I mean, there was, I guess I'll ask the question, was Tia, did you ever get explicit permission from the board to, you know, lobby on global warming or to serve on the global warming task force?
There was no board vote. I did discuss my service with all board members, none of whom objected. It honestly never occurred to me that being asked by a sitting governor to serve on a citizen task force would be objectionable. But I thought it was important that I notify the board members, which I did, and none of them objected.
And this is Doug again. I was the chair of the board at that time, and as Tia has said, and I reaffirmed, we were aware of it, and I agree with that statement. When the governor of Wisconsin asked someone to serve on the task force, I didn't think it was necessary for the board to approve that appointment, particularly when we were kept informed and no one board member had any objection. So I think this is foolishness, to be quite candid.
Well, it's foolishness for an executive secretary of the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands, which is basically $1 billion trust fund, to be engaging in time on global warming. I'm not talking about whether the governor appointed her. Obviously, the governor at that point, Governor Doyle, can appoint whoever he wants. My concern has to do with the hours of state hours. Like, for example, there was a date in where, I think I briefly talked on this once, where Ms. Nelson flew out to Washington, D.C., and spent the whole day out there testifying before Congress on global warming. Well, we are trustees of the fund, the $1 billion trust fund, which is to help children in Wisconsin. I don't know how debating global warming in Washington, D.C. has anything to do with a $1 billion trust fund. I mean, I think it's clear it has nothing to do with it. Whether our governor can appoint somebody or not, that's not the question I had.
I'd like to respond to the D.C. allegation since it's come up before. I did not spend the whole day in Washington working on climate change. I met with the chairman of the Appropriations Committee on a trade of BCPL lands with the U.S. Forest Service. I met with Senator Herb Cole. I met with Senator Herb Cole's chief of staff. I was in that hearing on climate change in which I was not testifying in favor or in opposition to any legislation. I was speaking for informational purposes only, reporting to Congress the unanimous recommendations of the Global Warming Task Force. And I was in that meeting for approximately 2 hours. My recollection is I worked a 12-hour day, 10 of those hours on BCPL business.
Well, I guess there's no way to know that, but I guess my whole point is I don't believe going forward, and maybe the commissioners disagree with me. I just, whether it's global warming or advocating on other issues, let's say it was we give money to schools, why would we have our executive secretary advocating on some sort of school choice issue? My point being it has nothing to do with the mission of our board, and I just don't want anyone working for this agency to work on that topic. Again, we're not discussing the merits of the topic. My only point is it's not board business. So that's my only point.
Okay. There's no action we can take retroactively relative to that, since no board member at that time had any objection to the activity. I don't think we can go back and realistically confirm hour for hour whether the executive secretary worked at least a minimum of 40 hours per week throughout the course of the time she served on that task force, nor do I think it's worth our effort at this time. At least two of us are brand new commissioners, and I think all we can do is focus moving forward, which I think can take us to item number five, it'd be six now. Unless there's anything else anyone has on this issue, I think we can move on then to the voting item on prohibiting staff from engaging in global warming or climate change work while on BCPL time.
Hey, this is Commissioner Domczyk. Maybe I'll just make a simple motion to do just that, prohibit staff from engaging in global warming or climate change while on BCPL time.
Well,
I'll second the motion.
Well, this is Doug. Having been on this board for close to 30 years, I've never seen such nonsense. I mean, this reminds me now that we've reached the point where we're going to try to gag employees from talking about issues, in this case, climate change. That's as bad as the governor of Florida recently telling his staff that they cannot use the word climate change. It's a real thing, and it does relate to our work, because we manage land, the land and the forests are affected by it. I don't think that our staff should make it a major preoccupation, obviously. In the case of the task force, which we've now put to bed, it was a reasonable thing given the governor's interest and wanted to know how it affects Wisconsin. Wisconsin is affected by climate change in many serious ways, and for us to be aware of it is good. So I think it's ridiculous, to be quite honest, to try to forbid people from having positions on or talking about a certain issue, in this case climate change.
Well, I'll just speak very briefly to it. I don't disagree that it's ridiculous that we have to do this, but I don't see any other way around it. I mean, this was something that was spent a lot of time on by, you know, the executive secretary's time, and I don't think that it's important or relevant to our trust funds that we talk about these two issues. It's not a part of our sole mission, which is to make money for our beneficiaries. That's what I want our employees working on. That's it. Managing our trust funds, and that's it.
Okay, I don't agree that this is a gag of any kind on the executive secretary. She certainly can participate, or any member of the staff can certainly participate in, you know, whatever activities are important to them personally. And I'm sorry, my dog is busy losing his mind. There's a squirrel or something that. I'm sorry, but I don't think it's gagging any member of the staff in any way, especially for the executive secretary and for Rich and Tom. This is not an 8-to-4 job. As we've just heard discussion about, there are town and county meetings that occur outside of the normal business day. There are trips up north where there are meetings regarding use of timberland and other things. So I don't think it's appropriate to say I don't think we're saying that they cannot engage in any advocacy on their own time. I do agree that this is not an issue that's directly on, climate change is not directly on par with what the BCPL's responsibilities are. So if that activity occurs in the future, we'll have to parse out the time so that we get our 40 hours out of the members of the staff and they can then engage in those activities on their time. So any other discussion on it?
Mr. Chairman, if we're going to vote on that now, I'd like to have the motion read very carefully so I can hear it.
Okay.
This is Matt. I guess I'll make the motion here. The motion to prohibit BCPL staff from engaging in global warming or climate change work while on BCPL time.
Okay, now let me ask a question then. What if they are asked by someone how climate change affects our forests, or how it affects other issues? Do they have to say, I'm sorry, I can't talk about climate change?
Well, I find that to be not a question that would be very likely, but why would they even need to answer that? I mean,
this is Tia here. You know, this is a topic of much discussion among timberland managers in northern Wisconsin. It is the featured story some months ago in the Great Lakes Timber Professionals Association magazine. It is being discussed by many other timberland investors, and there are several working groups up north. I'm not on any of them. I've been invited to be, but haven't had the time, looking at climate change impact on regeneration of certain timber species. So it is not, it is far from inconceivable that I would be asked a question about, as Doug has characterized. And I would need to know from you whether I'm allowed to answer said question.
How about you just forward the question to the commissioners?
So this is Doug again. Before we vote, what Tia said is exactly right, and I would go further. I mean, I would think if she was asked...
Oh, no.
Hello?
Sounds like we lost Doug.
Yeah. Okay.
What's happening?
Doug, you cut out. Everybody, I'm having a hard time hearing pretty much everybody. I think people are on their cell phones in distant parts. But if, Doug, you got cut off.
Okay, am I back?
Yeah.
In and out.
I won't
go on. I think people understand my position. I think climate change is a real thing which is affecting Wisconsin, and there's a lot of discussion of it. And for Tia to participate in that as executive secretary of this board, this is not only appropriate but a sensible urge to this motion.
Can you hear me, Secretary La Follette?
I can.
Okay, I guess my point is, I'm not saying that a person, in this case, let's say Tia Nelson, whoever, to what Attorney General Shimlett said. I mean, obviously, at some point in their life, if it's on the weekends or whatever, somebody, you can advocate on something on your personal time. I don't have a problem with that. This wasn't like a one email question. That this was an actual advocacy, you know, serving on a board, that type of stuff. I think we all get the gist of what we don't want to do. I mean, if literally an email comes into Tia asking about global warming, one email, well, I mean, she could forward it to us and we could all look at it. But, I mean, obviously, I would prefer that we didn't have to prohibit stuff like this. I mean, it just seems silly that we would have to. But that I'm not the one that's been, you know, engaging on this topic for years.
Just for the record, I haven't worked on climate change in any direct manner since the year 2008. Or 2007, I think.
Yeah, I mean, so in a lot of ways, it's a moot point, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, maybe we could just make it easier. I mean, Tia, is this something you're actively lobbying on right now on state time? I mean, just truthfully.
I have never lobbied on climate change on state time in the entire 10 years I've been at the Board of Commissioners.
Well, or not lobbying, working on behalf of.
I have not worked actively on climate change since the task force wrapped up its work, which I think was 2008. I did attend a meeting convened by a bunch of timberland managers and public land managers discussing the impacts of climate change on timber management. That meeting was a half-day meeting, and it occurred a couple of years ago.
Okay.
That's about all.
If you want to just forward stuff to me as you get it in, or the other commissioners, all three of us, anything related to global warming, I mean, it really doesn't matter. My point is, I just don't want staff time of five-hour meetings on a task force during the day to happen in the future. But obviously that task force doesn't exist anymore. So, I mean, a lot of ways it's a moot point. But, I mean, I don't think we necessarily, if we don't want to, we don't have to vote on it. It's up to the Attorney General and the other commissioner. But I just want to make it abundantly clear, I don't think it's staff time to be working on global warming or climate change. And I could add a whole slew of other things that we shouldn't have staff working on. This is the only one that staff have been working on. They weren't working on, you know, the mine project, you know, up in, you know, northern Wisconsin. That's another project BCPL staff shouldn't be working on. But I don't want to have to do a motion on everything that we don't have to ban it.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. And if there's no other discussion, I'll ask for the vote. All in favor of prohibiting staff from engaging in global warming or climate change work while on BCPL time, say aye.
This is Matt. I say aye.
This is Fran Schimmel. I say aye. All opposed, say nay.
No.
Okay. So we have two ayes and one nay, and therefore the motion is approved. Then on to item six. Item six is one that, Did we lose anybody?
I'm here.
Okay. Matt, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. All right. The next item, it was the discussion about bringing BCPL under the umbrella of the Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act. I have some discussion by email with Tia, and I think this proposal is that I'm going to wait till all the beeping stops.
What is all this beeping?
It's people getting off the line, I think.
Well, who's on the line besides the commissioners?
Oh, we have all sorts of reporters and other interested folks.
Okay, other people on the line. Gotcha.
Yeah. So, it's just people, they want to hear part of the meeting, and I guess they're not interested in the rest.
Okay.
But the this item, T and I had some email communication, and her recommendation is that the staff make a report regarding this issue in about 90 days. That makes sense to me. I'd like them to have some time to absorb whether this makes sense, and then make report to us so we can make a reasoned decision about whether we should seek inclusion of BCPL under Section 112.11 of the statutes. Seems fair enough to kind of defer this for 3 months?
Sure.
This is Doug. I'll have to confess that I know almost nothing about this. If Tia sent me emails, I must have missed them. I apologize.
Well,
but I love justice to a three-month investigation of what this is all about, and I would like to have information about it sent to me.
Yep, I think that's where we're at, Doug. Is we'll take 90 days for the staff to make a report to us regarding whether this makes sense for us to seek. Wisconsin is part of a uniform compact that addresses the way that institutional funds boards behave or manage. And we right now instead have, under Chapter 24, a very specific list of investments we can make. If we switch to falling under this, it would be instead governed rather than by specific statutory limitations, rather it would be by a prudent investor standard. So this is something that can have some long-range impacts for us. We should investigate it. So that's why I think it does make sense to defer this for 90 days. We'll have more information and can make a sound decision, or have a better chance of making a sound decision then. Fair enough?
Sure.
Sounds good. I'm very conservative about the kind of teams I thought we should make, so they expand to secure. I mean, a problem with them.
Yeah, I just want to make note that at least on this end, and probably in terms of the recording, Doug, we are missing a substantial number of your words, and Vicki will do her best with the minutes, but a lot of what you said is not being heard on this end.
That's strange. I hear everything you say.
Okay. Yeah, you break up a little bit, Doug. You were fine on that last transmission there. So let's move on to the next item, the Milwaukee Bucks arena financing update. We've seen some of the reports. It appears that there are some significant proposals out there that could involve the BCPL becoming involved in providing some of the financing for an arena in Milwaukee County. I have a couple observations, and then we can perhaps get an update from Tia on this. This is not unprecedented in theory. It was done previously with Lambeau Field, and there had to be a statutory change to Chapter 24 to permit that. We can, if the legislature is looking at doing this, I'm certain they can manage to make the statutory change that's necessary to authorize this. It is unprecedented, though, in one sense, that this appears likely to involve a much larger amount of money, and that puts us in a position that we may have to liquidate some assets if we were going to accomplish this. So those are the extent of my comments.
This is Doug. My only comment is, as I remember, the Lambeau Field, which raised a lot of eyebrows, but it also allowed us to educate people that's the one professional franchise that's actually owned by the municipality. So because the football team is owned by Green Bay, it made it legitimate, in my opinion, and the rest of the board, to make the loan we did.
Okay. I think this would be about the, as I understand it, this arena would be owned by some governmental body. The current Milwaukee Arena, the Bradley Center, as I understand, is owned by the state of Wisconsin. So, Tia, do you have any other update for us on this?
Yeah, no big news flashes. I think everybody knows from reading the newspapers there are several proposals out there that I think they're still a bit fluid as people try to come to consensus on what the best proposal is. My concern is simply ensuring that folks understand what we can and what we can't do, and that ultimately any decision is the sole purview of the majority vote of the board. And so we, as I've mentioned to you guys before, we have about $100 million in cash. It would be staff's recommendation that $50 million of that be held in reserve for projected anticipated loan demand in the next 4 to 6 months as municipalities count on us as a reliable funder of their public purpose projects. So we would have $50 million on hand right now as a potential investment. To generate more than that, and if you read the press, which is the way I have learned of these things, any number of the proposals that are in play would have BCPL making significantly larger investments. That would require us to sell some of our bonds, which is doable. It does have a few challenges, and that's what I took Tom and Rich in with me to the governor's office today. We explained that of the $1 billion, $400 million is out in municipal loans, about $500 million is in state, municipal, and farm credit bonds. That we believe that we could serve the interests of we believe we could make a recommendation to the board for a larger piece of the arena project financing, but it would require a sale of a portion of our bond portfolio, and that sale would have to be handled very carefully. Basically, everything that we are saying now is in that piece of paper I sent to all of you yesterday, and it is simply the caution of recognizing that we're holding a lot of bonds, and we could not dump them without negative impact to ourselves and to municipal borrowers. The way to handle that, in staff view, would be through a private sale, which is a manageable situation.
Hey, this is Matt real quick. What's the likelihood, let's say we wanted to liquidate $150 million to free up some money, what's the likelihood we could liquidate that if it's private sale, let's say to SWIB or some other entity? I mean, is that something they'd possibly want to do?
I'm going to we believe it's possible, but I'll let the expert speak. Tom?
Because SWIB has absolutely no one there that has any expertise on municipal bonds, I'm not sure, Matt. But there are big institutional funds out there that may be a possibility.
Well, okay. One of the suggestions we made to the governor's office, I think this would make has some appeal, is the Bucks owners themselves could agree as a part of a good faith effort to facilitate this package. They could agree to buy these bonds under the conditions that we negotiate with them, for instance. Their hedge fund managers might be something they're interested in doing to help make things go better.
Okay, this is Doug. Let me chime in briefly. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
You can? Okay, good. My concern is that if we liquidate bonds and provide funding for the stadium, either through bonds or through some sort of a loan, there's different kinds of bonds, and this is quite complicated, but I would not let the trust take a loss. There were comments in the press by some legislators. They wanted to borrow from us because they get a favorable rate. Well, I will not of giving them a favorable rate if we have to sell bonds at one interest rate and then try to, and they wanted to sell the loan to them at a lower rate. And that would be a loss for the trust, and I would not support that.
This
okay.
is Matt here. I mean, I think we're all kind of generally open to the concept. As I said one time to somebody in the press that I talked to, I mean, obviously it would have to make sense for our fund. I mean, we want to make sure that we're getting a good investment. I mean, if we can sell bonds, let's say, for nearly the same rate and we don't lose money on the transaction, and so we get rid of some bonds that aren't necessarily helping anything and we can do this project for, Milwaukee as an economic development thing for a city, it'll be worth considering. But, we obviously have to get more information from the legislature at some point, but I don't think we're going to do a loan that's going to make us lose money. Obviously, I'm not going to vote for that either. But I don't think that's going to be the loan presented to us.
I think there's one other thing to consider in all this. Some of my staff has made some inquiries regarding this, and we would be the last money in, as I understand it. All of the other funding sources, like the Bucks and the ownership things, all of that comes in first. So we wouldn't be needing to liquidate and make the money available immediately. We would have some time, or whatever the lifespan of getting this project done is. So it gives us a little bit of time, but we're going to have to conduct some more exploration on this. Does anybody have any information about what our timeline is for us to be able to give a thumbs up or thumbs down on this?
Great question, Brad. I asked that question of the governor's staff. This morning, my understanding is there'll be another meeting in the near term, and with all the relevant parties, and I think there's some hope that they'll reach agreement on a deal at that time. And then, as I mentioned, BCPL has $50 million now that's sitting in the SIF, not making very much, so we'd be eager to invest that in a way that makes sense. For the trust, I can assure you that staff isn't going to recommend anything to the board that we don't believe is in the best interest of the trust. What the actual schedule is for all of these activities, I have one piece of notes that's not in front of me now, but I think, Tom, didn't they say the facility had to be done by 2017?
2017.
Yeah. Other than the hope, I think there's a hope that, before too much more time goes by, the deal gels and there's some agreement, right, you know, because right now, like I said, I think there's three deals out there being talked about, and I think that we can work with any of them potentially, but they have to decide what they want to do, and it's just a lot of speculation at this point, Brad.
One last thing. I think it would be important if we could have the staff there, you know, somebody contact SWIB or, you know, have Rich look out to, you know, some of those insurance companies or whatever and see what kind of options there would be to sell a group of it in a big, you know, chunk, like 100, 150 million, see how easy that would be able to do as a private party. I mean, that would give us as commissioners a little better background.
Okay. Is that okay for Rich for someone to do?
Yep. We can do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Did the governor indicate, or in the meeting with the governor's team, did they indicate how much money they're talking about?
They're talking about a different amount than is legislative leadership and a different structure. But everybody's talking about somewhere between 150 and 220 million.
Okay. Well,
in one case, you know, the county's borrowing money. In another case, BTPL is buying bonds issued by the state, I think. We didn't get in, you know, though I've heard other rumors that it could be issued by the arena authority. But nobody, at least in today's conversation, there was no discussion of us doing a transaction with the arena authority.
Okay.
But like I said, you know, it's been fairly fluid. Just based on what I'm reading in the newspapers and then what little I know from direct conversations, I do want everyone to know that I've already informed you that I met with legislative leadership staff. I'm going to, and today met with governor's office staff, and our goal is to just tell people what we can and can't do. We are eager to be helpful. We believe we can be helpful. A private sale of the bonds is the primary issue that we're concerned with, along with, obviously, you know, the paramount issue for us is, does it make financial sense for the trust? We think it can, but we don't know until we know what the deal is. And staff will be very deliberative in their analysis that they present to the board, and I will keep you posted. I will tell you every day that what I, you know.
Is this something that is anticipated to be part of the budget, or is this a separate issue?
I think that they anticipate it to be part of the budget.
Well, then we do have a bit of a timetable in front of us.
Yep.
When do we next want to address this at a BCPL meeting with in greater detail? Now, the April 21st meeting, Tia, you're not available.
I am not available, but Tom and Rich are. If we have updates, then they can do that. I am out all of that week, and I'm on a plane when that board meeting is occurring, but my very able deputies could update you if we have a – and they could also explain, go through, you know, the memo I sent to you guys last night. We just put that together yesterday to guide our conversation with the governor's office today. There's a, you know, I think most of it's fairly straightforward. There's a little bit for you to digest in there. And if you wanted, for instance, Tom and Rich to walk you through this document in greater detail and provide you with an update, anything that's happened or we've learned about between today and the next board meeting, that's something that we can do, and I don't need to be there. I mean, I would like to be there, but it doesn't matter. We should, you know, keep you guys up to speed in real time.
Hi, this is Matt real quick. I'm assuming if the legislature comes up at some point here with some sort of proposal, you know, that's public, you know, how they're going to do it and structure it and all that stuff, I'm assuming at that point, because obviously we can only meet publicly, there's no reason to stop individual members from just, you know, talking it over as well and just knowing what's happening. Before we make decisions, obviously we've got to come together as a group here. It's just none of us three can individually, we can't talk about this together.
Yep.
So, I mean, at that point.
This is Doug.
Yeah, go ahead.
Doug, I had a question. I don't see why it would be part of the budget unless they want to make a change in law that they would include in the budget, but it's not a budgetary issue for the states, is it?
Yeah, I don't think it has to be, but the way I understand, let's just say that this morning it was suggested to me that the legislature, I mean, the governor did put into his budget a budget proposal to finance the arena, and that proposal is being debated in the legislature and appears to be something that's going to be modified. So if it involves bonding of the state, I believe it has to be in the budget.
Yeah, it does seem like this is something that's going to put us on the budget time frame here. So,
yeah, I mean, if the county came to borrow money from us, that would not have to be in the budget. But if the state is going to issue bonds, then that would have to be in the budget.
Matt, it sounds like you might be able, in between now and our next meeting, to develop some more details, and it would be very helpful if you're able to do that.
Yeah, I'm going to work and try to talk to as many people, and needless to say, this, you know, obviously you've got staff, and I'm assuming, like, for example, Secretary La Follette, once they've got a package, I'm assuming, you know, they can reach out and brief each one of us if we want. You know, they're just briefing us. We're not voting on anything. And
right.
I think at some point we'll have a lot of questions individually. Some of it we can do with, you know, whether it's the legislature or the governor's office, and then we'll come together as a group, and then we'll have some probably more questions, and at some point we'll have to vote.
Okay. Anything else on this?
Nope.
Then the next item is a vote on additional board chair duties, and we have several different items. I think we probably should take them one at a time. The first one addresses expenditures over $5,000. You know, I had meant in the time between our last regular meeting and this meeting to find out just how many expenditures over $5,000 do we have, and I didn't do it. So.
Yeah, well, Brad, I did ask Denise to run that analysis for the last five fiscal years, and I wasn't able to get that to you because there's just been so much going on. I do have it in front of me. Decisions would have to be made as to whether you want to count salaries or what we paid the Department of Administration to move offices, our rental space, our health. You know, there are certain expenditures that are fixed that I don't think, but I don't want to speak for Commissioner Adamczyk, was targeting, but I don't know. I could send the list to everybody.
Maybe you just send that for now, and we can move this to another meeting.
Okay. That's fair
I'm
enough.
I'm okay to move on if you guys have other stuff. I mean, we don't have to do everything today. When things go on the agenda, we can be pretty, you know, if we want to move stuff around, I'm fine with that.
Okay. Well, then why don't we bump this to the April 21st meeting, and then we can get the information about how many expenditures we're talking about, and then maybe we can get some information on the amount of in-state and out-of-state travel. I'll just say that I'm reluctant to have the board chair approve all in-state travel. I think we'd just be talking mostly about mileage reimbursements, and for that I'm not particularly interested in micromanaging that. I recognize that that staff are going to town and county meetings, and that starts to be pretty micromanaging for my taste. Let's see, and you know, approving work hours. As board chair, I think I do need to communicate a little more regularly with the executive secretary. So, you know, she and I can certainly work together. Based on our conversations we've had, I don't have any concerns that she's not giving us absolute minimum of 40 hours per week. So I don't think that'll be a big problem. So let's put this off till next time, that agenda item, and then We had also a kind of a related item is the next one, vote required to require a vote for any travel by the executive secretary or commissioners paid for by BCPL funds. Dob, do we want to take that on today?
We can, you know, if you want to, we can move on and not do it today. What I'm mostly looking for is the out-of-state conference travel. And frankly, I don't think it would be that much because there's only a couple of those a year for at least the commissioners and probably the executive secretary because these things are known months in advance. I think at a minimum it wouldn't be hard for the three of us to vote on that.
I'll make a motion that the commissioners vote to approve any out-of-state travel for the secretary, staff, or commissioners.
I'll second the motion.
Well, this is Doug. So, I've been on board for quite a while, as you know, and I've attended a number of these meetings of associations, and I find them useful, and I would propose to continue to represent us at those meetings. So you're saying that if I wish to attend the next one, which is probably in July, then I would submit a request to Tia, and she would put it on an agenda? Exactly, Brad, how would you expect me to get permission?
Well, I think since we meet every 2 weeks, we can be pretty nimble about addressing these things quickly so you don't miss a reservation deadline and things. But, yeah, I think that is the proposal, is that if any of the commissioners or staff are planning to go to an out-of-state conference, that we discuss it as a board and approve it. That's the motion I intended, and I think that's what the treasurer intended to put on.
Yeah, it sounds exactly what I intended for. Because, I mean, these are things that are months in advance. We meet nearly every 2 weeks, and if it's decided that X employee needs to go or this employee needs to go, I don't think it's too much to ask that the three of us vote on it.
Yeah, and Doug, I don't think this should be read as a prohibition on anybody attending these conferences. I think it's just a matter of us taking them up as a board to determine whether it is something that's useful, and then we vote on it. So,
right. Well, I don't see this to be a big deal. Historically, we sort of indirectly did that. Tia asked if any commissioners wished to attend a certain meeting, and any commissioner that wanted to said yes, and so it was sort of an indirect approval of people wanting to go, but if you want to put it on an agenda item, we can do it that way.
Okay.
Then all in favor, say aye.
Matt, I say aye.
Brad, aye.
I guess I'll know just sort of out of principle. I think it works fine with Tia managing.
Oh, you broke up there, Doug. I couldn't tell if you were giving us an I or a nay.
I gave you a nay just out of sort of principle. I think Tia has done a good job managing it.
Okay. Then the motion has carried 2-1, and we can move forward in that process. If it becomes unworkable or unmanageable, we can always revisit, you know, with a motion in the future.
Great. You know, and Brad, I appreciate your effort in making that work. Thank you.
And then the next item is a discussion and vote regarding commissioners' duty to receive BCPL info and staff documentation on efforts. As I understand it, there's been some friction when Treasurer Gomchek has sought information. Is that what this item's about?
Well, and we don't need to have a vote on it. I just always throw the word discussion vote. But I guess all I would say to this point is there are three people that are commissioners, the Attorney General, the Secretary of State, and myself. And the Constitution spells out that we are the commissioners of this fund. I think it's obviously an important fund. It's a $1 billion trust fund. And sometimes when I ask for information, and I understand it can't necessarily be turned over in 1 minute, but oftentimes it's implied that I'm asking for a lot or I'm burdening, you know, people that work at the agency. Well, when I ask for something or if the Attorney General does or the Secretary of State does, we are the three people most responsible, 100% responsible for this board. And obviously I just think it's something that we should get and not be told that it's, you know, it's very difficult or we can't get to it. And I just think as a general consensus, I think it's important. And I probably will ask for more than, let's say, the Secretary of State has, but that's my prerogative as a commissioner. I have a lot of time to look into this, and I find this stuff to be important, and, I'm going to ask for information, and I don't want to feel as though I can't ask information.
Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to see clarification. I've fulfilled over 45 information requests from Matt, and the date the request was made and the date the request was complied with is on that spreadsheet that I shared with all the board members, and all of them have been fulfilled in a timely fashion, except following the board agreement, the normal school fund earnings report is to be presented at a May meeting. So in essence, I've complied with every request, and I've recorded the dates in which the request was received and complied with, and I believe we've complied in a timely fashion. And it is true, extraordinary effort has been put into complying with these requests. And I have never complained about it, but I have had to keep track because it's been a huge volume, and it's also been staff flow and routine business. There was a week here where we actually didn't process any loan applications because of the volume of requests we were receiving. It's just a fact.
Well, this is Matt here. I mean, some of the requests that I asked for, I mean, these things are just very simple things. Like, for example, the normal school fund, we have biennial reports going back, I have the documents going back to, I think, 05. And it lists in there, 2006 or 2013, 2012, and it'll say, expenditures. For me to ask what that number is, where it is, it should be in a document that the BCPL already has. And if that number doesn't exist, that's a problem. I mean, these are on our biennial reports. I don't believe these numbers were just made up. And, it's just part of the problem is you guys are holding all the information over there, and as staff, yourself and all the staff that work there, you all have access to more information than I do. And, I'm a commissioner, and I have a responsibility to look into this. And I understand I take probably, a deeper, delving into this more than maybe some other commissioners might, but I think it's perfectly under my purview to do so.
Is there an example of me being unresponsive, Matt, a specific example?
Well, I guess, like, for example, we just talked about the normal school fund thing. Oftentimes we'll say stuff in a meeting. We haven't voted on it. And sometimes it gets thrown in my back at me, oh, no, we're not talking about that till, in the May meeting or the June meeting. Well, I just want some numbers. I mean, we're not even discussing it. But as a commissioner, you sent me the one for the 2014, and I think you CC'd the other commissioners. That was for the normal school fund. I would assume that that document exists for 13, 12, 11, 10, 9.
I'm sorry. Hello? Did we lose contact?
I'm here.
No.
Okay, good. Good.
Well, Tia, do those documents exist for previous years, or do they have to be created?
Well, I sent out the minutes. I understood the request to be a comprehensive analysis of normal school fund spending, and the board agreed, and you agreed it was fair that we produce that report in May. I have subsequently responded to a Fiscal Bureau request, and I have copied you on that, along with all the other commissioners, but I don't have it in front of me, approximately 45 information requests, 44 have been complied with, and one of them, the board, with your concurrence, asked us to produce a report for May. And
this
is Doug. I'd like to put my two cents in.
Go ahead.
There's two parts to this. The one part that should be clear is if any of us have a request, we should make that to Tia, not go around her and start asking the staff for things. And I feel strongly about that. And in the past, I've been a little sloppy. So I would like to, I don't need to make a motion, I don't think, unless there's disagreement, that the request go to Tia, and then she can talk to the proper staff people. The more complicated issue, and in a previous meeting, I tried to resolve this. I don't think it's necessary to have all these requests for information unless and until there is a reason that the board has to do something that requires us to have this information. Because of that, I suggested that if one of the commissioners wants to have a certain information researched to find out certain facts, data, numbers that the board can consider for a certain reason, that would be on a future agenda item request. The board would then say, yes, we'd like to look into that. Please provide information. Or the board majority could say, no, that's a waste of staff time. We don't want to go into that right at the moment. I made that proposal. It was rejected by a 2-1 vote. I think that was a mistake. I'm not sure we want to revisit it right now, but I think that our operation and our staff, and I'm speaking after 30 years of experience, has been seriously undermined and seriously hampered by excessive requests when there's no agenda item that requires that information. I said my piece.
I'll wrap up here, too. This is Matt Adamczyk here. It probably comes down to a difference of how you want to, you know, serve as a commissioner. I want to know as much as I can. There are probably tons and tons of files that they have over there regarding expenditures and so forth. I mean, put it on a DVD for me. I'll go through it. I want to know everything I can. I don't necessarily need staff to create new documents. I want to know what exists out there. These are biennial reports that we submit every 2 years. I'm assuming they have a folder in some sort of shared drive that says 2013 biennial report, 2011 biennial report. I mean, I want the information to look it over. I'm a commissioner. I have as much right to this information as anyone, not to mention it's public information. But
here, Doug, I disagree. Our board, our staff serves at the pleasure of the board, and they're to provide information to the board so we can make intelligent and appropriate decisions. The staff is not at the whim of individual commissioners to look up information which is not necessary for the functioning of the board. And I feel strongly about that. And to do that is basically borderline on harassment rather than trying to provide information to do our jobs as commissioners.
The Secretary LaFollette, I guess I'd ask this question. If I wanted, let's say, 2013-14 biennial report, every single document that the BCPL has on it, that doesn't require them to do anything. They could just put it on a flash drive. I want to go through the documents and look through it all. Maybe you don't care to do it. It's just something that I care to look at. I don't need them to give me anything, do anything. Just give it to me. I want to know the numbers because I find this stuff to be interesting, and I want to know everything I can to know because I take it as an extremely important duty to do my fiduciary duty to make sure that we're making money for our trust beneficiaries.
Okay. This is the chair. I understand all of the positions here. I understand that the staff has duties that keep them busy already, and compiling this information to respond to the requests creates additional duties. Above all, though, we are a governmental body, and so as the treasurer notes, the public would have a right to get this information if they sought it. He's certainly a member of the public, but he hasn't an access to this information above even a member of the public as a commissioner, and he has a fiduciary responsibility to do it. So these are his decisions to make, what he thinks, what information he believes is important for him to do his duties. And I think the bottom line is all we can do is have our staff at BCPL do the best they can in the midst of their other duties to get the information provided. And I think for us to debate whether it's a waste of time, I don't think that's not in the best interest of open and responsible government. The information should be available, and commissioners should be taking their responsibilities seriously. You know, frankly, you know, Secretary LaFollette, over the years, it appears you have been heavily engaged in your responsibilities as a commissioner. It's not all that clear to me that every other commissioner has been. And so I think this is going to, so, you know, Commissioner Adamczyk is making some waves by wanting this information. I think this is going to calm down, though, because...
I agree.
Yeah, we're new. He's going to get this information, and then he'll be up to date, and we're not going to see this. This isn't going to be every month after month that he's looking for all this historical information. He'll have it, and we'll just be focusing on moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. And I guess I'll just ask one quick question, and I'll wrap up here. Thank you, gentlemen, both of you. I guess I would ask whether it's Tia or one of the people that work in the office there. On the biennial reports that are submitted, there's numbers in there that are listed on the sheet there. Do those numbers have documents that correspond with it, PDFs, Excel documents? And if they do, I mean, why couldn't I just be given those? I mean, I'd be happy to walk over a flash drive or something. I just want to go through them and see what's out there. I think this stuff already exists. What the problem is I'm being told I should be made to look at it. I want to look at it sooner than that. It doesn't mean we have to talk about it as a board till May.
I just take strenuous objection with the way this is being characterized. I have fulfilled all but one request in a timely fashion. There is one request that we, Tom and I, understood to involve a comprehensive production of a report for the board on the normal school fund expenditures, and you, Matt, agreed that it was fair that we presented that report in May. And
I
am not finished, Matt. I would like to finish on this. I have been accused, again, of being unresponsive. The record is clear. I have fulfilled every request of yours. We are approaching 50 requests. I have the date of the request, the nature of the request, the date the request was complied with. The only outstanding request is one in which you yourself agreed would be complied with in May. So I don't understand, and I don't accept an unchallenged allegation in this regard.
Well, I guess my question would be, first and foremost, why is there a detailed list being kept? I mean, realistically, I'm not saying any one person over there works for me. The people that work at the board, it's a group of 10, they serve the commissioners, and I'm one of three commissioners. And my only point is, that would be like staff in one of our respective offices keeping a tally of how many requests we have. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you're wondering if you've complied with the request and then know you're done with it, that's one thing. But I mean, some of those you said 45. I mean, the things I ask for are very simple documents, and I don't know why I should.
Let's stop this. I have to get going. We've gone over this about 29 times. This is repetitive.
Well, that's your opinion, but.
The requests are not simple, Matt, and I have to keep, we have so many of them that I have to keep track of them, otherwise I can't know whether I'm fulfilling your request or not.
Some of them seem easy to me, but we can move on.
Okay. Okay. Then future agenda items, we've already moved some ideas or some items over to the April 21st meeting, and I think, frankly, by then we might have a longer discussion about the Bucks Arena financing issue, so I think our agenda is starting to fill out for that meeting already. Because Tia is not available, we won't take up any more of the items relating to her evaluation or assessment, so we won't do that at the next meeting. Anything else that anybody wants to put on that April 21st meeting agenda?
Well, I guess my question was the stuff I want regarding the normal school fund, which again are just simple documents. When will I be given those documents?
What were you asking me a question? The staff was talking.
About the normal school fund going back 10 years, a 10-year look back of documents that I'm assuming already exist. I want to know when I presented those so that I could take a look at them.
As Tom explained and as the minutes reflect in the previous meeting, going back 10 years seriously complicates the request due to changes in accounting procedures. So if you want 10 years, it's going to take the full time we requested from the board, which was 30 days.
What day are we talking about?
It's in the board minutes. I don't have them in front of me. You agreed to the date, as did everybody else. I'm going to have to look it up.
Okay, well, we met 2 weeks ago, and it's 2 weeks from now, so that will be 30 days, more or less. Would it not be our next meeting?
I told you I don't know without looking at the minutes.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, I just don't think these, I guess, I don't need anything created by the board. What the board could give me, the staff there, is they could give me what they have currently. I mean, literally the documents they currently have. I don't need anything created. It's literally sliding it over. If they can look at it, certainly as a commissioner, I should look at it.
This is Doug. Here we go again. I mean, Mr. Chairman, clearly we decided that that we should look into this in detail. 10 years is a project. We agreed that we would get the information, we would get the documents, all three books them, and the report would be due to us in May. That seemed reasonable. Let's move on.
Just one point of clarification. Matt, if all you want are 10 years of biannual reports, you can come over and pick them up right now.
Well, the biannual reports are online. I have those. I want the breakdown of the normal school fund expenditures. That's it. Whatever those numbers are in the reports, so if it says $700,000, what is the $700,000? How is that number allocated? That's all I want. I don't think it's that much to ask.
Yeah, well, you'll get it whenever that May date is in the board meeting. It is not a simple request. Particularly going back 10 years, that's why we asked for some time to prepare it, and you agreed to that time frame, and we are in process. I don't understand how you can now allege that I'm being unresponsive when you yourself agreed that that was an acceptable time frame.
Okay, we'll move past it. I guess I was just going to ask a simple question that I can't understand. So if I look at fiscal year 2009, I just pulled up the biennial report. It says that the operating expenses for the normal school fund are $747,836.
Okay, this is Doug. I'm going to have to leave the meeting. I have other duties to attend to, and this is repetitive. I look forward to finding out when I see the final minutes what you two decided to do about this issue. I'm sorry I have to leave, but it just seems
have a good day, Doug.
Necessary.
Okay.
And I'm fine to wrap up. I just want to know that one question. Does that $747,000 for fiscal year 2009 that's on our report, does that number get extrapolated out somewhere? Because it's on our report. I'm just wondering, where is the allocation? There must be some document that proves that. Am I wrong, or?
Nope, there's a document.
It exists currently?
Denise, the accountant has just left. I will repeat. The years that you want to go farther out make this more difficult. I'm going to pause here. Tom, would you like to speak? Tom is supervising the production of the report. Tom?
You know what? I think at this point, I'm going to let the treasurer approach this with staff to start out. We can
want to move adjournment, sir?
Yeah, we can put this on the April 21st meeting, and if it isn't resolved by then, we can have further discussion. But it does sound unlikely that we're going to get the answer in this.
Well, and we'll probably have a lot to do with the Bucks too. So let's just move adjournment, sir.
Okay, I second that, and with only two of us left, I think we're all set.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great week.
Bye-bye now.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.